This is CliffCentral.com.
Hello there. Welcome to the Opinion Booth. My name is Sonia Booth, and today's guest, Stanton Steger, a.k.a., I don't know if you have any other a.k.a.s, also known as Mr. Fredericks. Welcome to the Opinion Booth.
Good afternoon, Sonia. Thanks for having me. And I've been exposed to the Opinion Booth. I get the emails every morning, but I've never been here, so thanks for the overdue invite.
Do you, so you get emails, but do you actually open the podcasts and listen to them? Because now I'm about to expose you, and I'm about to get even.
I have not.
Mm-hmm.
Honesty is the best policy, but
I will
be subscribing if my excuse is good enough. I haven't had fiber. Now I have fiber at home. Is that okay?
Levels. Fiber. Okay? He's not even talking about Wi-Fi. He's talking about fiber. It's like levels, my bro. So now, in 2015, you swapped your soccer boots for dancing shoes. Mm. What did that experience teach you? I mean, something about yourself that you didn't realize you had it deep within.
Wow, Sonia, you know, being a footballer, you normally put yourself in a bubble. And I'm not just say footballer, I'll say sports person. And it's very difficult to do something outside of your comfort zone. And post-football, I'm going to quote your book here. You try and reinvent yourself. And look at that smile.
You are the best. And to think I haven't even paid you for that. Continue. I'm loving this. Carry on.
No, but honestly, you know, you find a space where you need to reinvent yourself. And sometimes you need to stay relevant if there's different spaces that you want to go into. And I thought, firstly, I said, this is an opportunity to get that relevance back, to be out in the media space again. So I went into this competition being a little blind, not understanding what is going to be required of me, the level of discipline, the level of dedication, just respecting the sport or the art called dance, you know. And we're jumping into it. I just assumed, no, I'll train two hours a day, and come the weekend I'll be able to compete. But very quickly did I come to learn that it's such a discipline that needs dedication and devotion. And I ended up spending possibly 8 hours a day training and learning how not to embarrass myself come the day of the live shows.
8 hours, as in solid 8 hours, or broken up?
And broken up, like I'd go 2 hours, 3 hours, sometimes an hour. Sometimes you just have this mental block where you just can't learn. It's fatigue, it's anxiety, it's just a whole lot of difficult things thrown into you. But it started speaking to me as a professional athlete. You know, you start dedicating yourself. It's like the preparation during the week, and then you have a match over the weekend. So it was the live shows on the Friday evenings, which I invited you. You didn't come. Anyway.
I did not receive an invite. You must have sent it to Matthew. And if you send anything to Matthew, forget it.
Okay, so Matthew attended one of the live shows. Sorry, Matthew, threw you under the bus there.
Okay. But he probably went with his Makwapeni there, Tryfina. You know, he loves Tryfina for all the live shows. That's why he takes it.
I mean, that guy, he's got this fear factor in him. But anyway,
okay. I think have you got a spare bedroom? Because I think Matthew's gonna need a place to sleep tonight. Yeah, you were saying.
Yes,
so discipline, right? I mean, the discipline that you had to have as a professional sportsman for so many years.
Yes.
That's one of the things that you had to bring into the dancing competition.
100%. But it taught me so much about myself. You know, often we set boundaries for ourselves, and one of the difficulties I had was trying not to look gay. You know, as a man, sometimes we fight this, which is totally not me.
Why were you worried about looking gay? There's nothing wrong with looking gay.
I know this, but in me, I come to understand that me throwing my hand out there and having the finger and the pointing, it's just going to bring out the feminine side of me.
Nothing wrong with that.
I know, but I've come to understand that once I understood that you have to let yourself go if you're going to take this on. Just be you, be who you are. And I think that's the moment when everything came together and it just clicked. And something that that the experience of Strictly Come Dancing, which is now known as Dancing with the Stars, has taught me is that I never listen to females' instructions. Like, if I take it to my household, I say I'm listening to my wife, but I'm not listening to her. I listen, but I'm not listening. And I found the difficulty with my partner. I couldn't take instructions from her. But the minute a third eye, that's what they call it in dance, a third eye comes in and gives me tips, he says exactly what Aaron, which was my dance partner, was telling me. But I just could not absorb it. And that taught me. Now, when I go home, I listen.
Wow, that is profound.
It's amazing.
Hence I said, you know, my question was, did it unearth something that you must have had deep within? Because, I mean, there's a reason why I invited you on the show. We're going to chat about that as, you know, as the hour progresses. So now, still on the dancing. I mean, first of all, let me just put it out there that I admire your chutzpah. Any men, especially as sportsmen, because sports is all about the physique, right? Yep. It's all about being rough on the field, you're being tackled, your shins are getting kicked at, and you also get angry and agitated, and you also want to go and pay, you know, kick the other player as well. So it's all about, you know, I'm the strong one, and yet dance, as you said, it's so effeminate, and it's being in touch with your female feminine side, and so forth and so forth. But I remember a conversation I had with your wife, Gwyn. I said to her, there's no ways in hell Matthew would partake in such a show. I mean, watching him getting close and personal with another woman. You know how she responded? Do you know what she said to me? She
what
said,
did she say?
Friend, he had a six pack. That was her answer. So I think she was she was more interested in the fact that she had a six pack more than Aaron. You said that was your partner. I mean, I'd be more worried about Aaron being up close and personal to Matthew than the six pack.
She mustn't fool you. I'm sure her guards were right up there. But I think the minute she came in and she started understanding that this is something that I really want to do, when she's seen the hours I dedicated to it, and anything outside of that, it stunts your growth in the competition. It stunts. You need to build a relationship with your partner, and this is a partner of the opposite sex. And so once you understand that this is a partnership, and she accepted this partnership, then it just becomes easier and makes life a little easier. But it wasn't as easy as she said. Trust me.
Okay, I'm gonna be having a lot more conversations around this issue, because I'm very intrigued about her thinking. She's a very strong woman. I can tell you that right now.
So, can I just let you know that the first series of Dancing with the Stars was the beginning of this year, and the producer called me. She said, "Stanton, I need a soccer player." I said, "Keeleen, I've got the soccer player."
You did?
Yes.
I hope you didn't write Matthew's name down.
The first name on the list was Matthew Booth. So you're doing your job well.
You have death wishes.
He said, mate, and I quote him, mate, I don't think the missus will allow that.
No chance. No chance. So now, I invited you here today, not only because you're a football legend. I mean, everybody knows the name Stigger, right? But I invited you here because, you know, as you've said it already, I mean, you put the title of my book out there, and I think you knew exactly why I invited you here. But let's put it out there. I invited you here because you know how to reinvent yourself and stay relevant. You were raised by a loving, caring, and supportive woman. You then met and married a level-headed, loving, and supportive woman. And then 7 years ago, you were blessed with a Greek goddess. The main focus today is on them, those three generations, your three leading ladies. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Throw me in the deep end.
What does it mean to be a man in today's world? There is a lot of confusion about this and a lot of anger directed at men. This is a conversation about masculinity everyone needs to hear. In this raw and authentic series of 6 podcasts, Craig Wilkinson and Khalil Osiris start from the premise that true masculinity is a great gift to the world. Equally relevant to men and women, it provides profound insights into why men behave the way they do. It unpacks the 3 core desires at the heart of every man. The question every boy needs answered on this journey to manhood. The 4 big lies about masculinity. What wounds the masculine heart? And the one thing every man wants from women more than sex. Men to Men Talks is brought to you by Carling Black Label. Drink responsibly, not for sale to persons under the age of 18. Available now on the cliffcentral.com website. Stanton,
yep.
I've seen how you interact with your mum, and all I see is love.
Yeah, Sonia, I grew up from a single parent, single mum. So all I knew for many years was my mom. In times of joy, in times of need, in times of struggle, in times of needing direction, sometimes she wasn't qualified to give advice. And so the person that you lean onto, that's beside you every step of your way, every step of your childhood, pushing you along, knowing that your dream is to become a football star, supporting you, driving you, and 6 or 7 of your friends to games every Saturday, not knowing if there's petrol in the car to take you there, you know, just providing. It's something that you will always cherish, and I think that is why I have the respect for women, because this person that's been guiding me, loving me. Sometimes the effects is you become too soft if you're surrounded by females all the time. And I think that's part of my character. But I think as I evolved to become a man, the process was a little slower. Hence, I only got married at the age of 30. It's something that's embedded inside of you that I never grew up around a family. So a husband, wife, child, siblings. So for me, that's not the norm. So growing up, I don't foresee that. Hence me getting married a little too late. And I don't have regrets, but if there's something I would have done different, I would have gotten married a little bit earlier.
Wow. You know, I understand that we all want different things and, you know, at different stages in our life. But I mean, 30 doesn't sound late. I mean, to a lot of people, for me, I disagree with this whole generic way of doing things that at, you know, at 22, you should be having your first degree. At 25, you should have a husband. At 30, you should have had 4 kids or whatever. I don't agree. I don't agree with that. So I don't think you should beat yourself too hard about it.
No, I follow you. I follow you. And I've come to learn this because, as you know, Sonia, football has blessed me to live in different countries, to have different friends from all over the world. I've lived in 3 different countries. I've got so many friends. And you start to understand that, look, I come from the Kasi. I come from Nuclear Westbury. Where you grow up, there's certain cultural habits and things that you follow. You know, the status quo is to finish school, get married, get a car, get a child, buy a house. And that's how it's supposed to be. And you seem to be successful. But fortunately, football forced me away from the status quo. And that is when you realize, as you rightfully mentioned, 30 is not too late. But in my family, in my society, 30 is late. You're disrespecting the girl. You've been with her for so long. Why don't you make her honest woman? Blah, 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 blah,
from
blah.
That point of view.
From that point of view, yeah.
Okay, so the notion is that don't date too long. Make a decent, inverted commas, make a decent woman out of her by marrying her. Okay, yeah. I get you. So now tell me, you are the only child. Were you spoiled? I mean, were you considered a cheese boy by your peers? Because you strike me as someone who is spoiled. I mean, I know your mom spoils you even today. Even, you know, as a man with two kids and a wife, your mom spoils you. I look at you and I see cheese boy growing up. No,
so I'm not gonna run away from that. I'm not too sure spoiled, but loved.
Yeah, loved. Definitely.
When I say loved, I mean to the max, proper. So to answer your question, yes, I'm not a cheese boy, but yes, I was dearly loved.
Okay, that's a very diplomatic way of answering a question. Okay, so you just want me to move away. You don't want me to call you spoiled, but cheese boy. Okay, all right, we'll move along. It's okay. Now, let's talk about another leading lady in your life. You call her your ride or die. I mean, I was stalking your social pages yesterday because I was digging for dirt, you know? And, you know, it's obvious you're a family man. You put yourself out there as a family man, which is, it's very rare, especially amongst sports people. You know, they don't like, you know, posting about their wives. I mean, you every year you post happy anniversary, my ride or die, my, what do you call it? My boss, the boss. You call her the boss
lady.
I mean, what have you learned from her, and what aspects of her would you say are a replica of your daughter Athena?
You know, they say, I say ride or die, because I come back to, once again, the sports person. You live the glitz and glamour, travel abroad, play for the national team, and the fame follows you. And then the candle dwindles in the light. And then you're no longer the jersey number 10. And if you as a person never attached yourself to that, it's easy to make the transition. But statistics show that 75% or 80% in England, I'm not even going to bring it home, within 5 years are divorced. Pro footballers, within 5 years of retiring, are divorced. Because what happens? Your financial income is not the same anymore. You are not, when you walk into the room, it doesn't stop anymore. And so many times partners, not you yourself, your partner hangs on to that. And if that is no more, they then disappear. So when I say ride or die, I'm literally saying that through good and bad, through tough circumstances, I know this woman, this partner will be there with me. Because we were together when we had nothing. When we were able to do what we wanted to, we enjoyed it together. And now, before you reinvent yourself again, we are together. If tomorrow we need to eat bread and catch a taxi, I know she'll do that with me. So hence the term ride or die. It's very rare that you have a partner. And I think I was blessed to have selected this woman to be the mother of my children and my life partner.
Jeez, okay, you're about to spoil my mascara because you've said something that I was hoping you would say, but I'm glad that I didn't have to prompt you, because then it was going to be almost as though I was trying to instill an idea in your head. Luckily for me, I know Gwen. And I know what a strong woman she is. Not only strong, but I know how, hence I use the word level-headed. She's very chilled. You've been married for 9 years, but together for a whole 22 years. That's an adult, right?
You must have been speaking
You've raised an adult. In 22 years, you've been together. This child has now become an adult. What has your union taught you about life in general?
Okay, so Guinevere's background is she's one of six children. A very intelligent woman that she's the eldest of the six. So she had to not study. Straight out of school. Matric exemption, good grades. Easily could have gotten a scholarship to study further and pursue her dreams. But because of family requirements, financial requirements, she needed to go and study. I mean, find a job and work. So those ethics, those values that she has, she sacrifices herself for everybody else around her. And she does the same for me and her family. So that values that she brings into the marriage. The humbleness, that constantly being gashly, being thrifty. You know, she brings that in the household. Whereas you have Stanton, on the other hand, that I'm just a spender. If I see something nice, I want to do it. I want it. I like it. And then that's what she's brought to the union. She's kind of balanced me and just instilled that gratitude with whatever we're blessed with or whatever we don't have, we make do with. And I think that's the blessing that she's brought into this this union.
Wow. Sure. Okay. You know, I'm just happy that you're putting it out there.
Something that you can relate to.
I am smiling from ear to ear, and like I said, you're ruining my makeup because of all the beautiful things that you're saying. And I think I know you mean it, and I know she is a very deserving woman, and I know that she's listening, and I know that her makeup is also being spoiled. So I'm not the only one who's ruining her makeup today. So now I want to move on to something that I think you are the best person to comment on or pass an opinion on, because of the caliber of a person that you are and the fact that you are a role model to a lot of youngsters, both male and female, whether they play football or not. And because also you are a motivational speaker, right? Years ago, I received a private message on Facebook from an 18-year-old girl who wanted to know how she could find and marry a footballer. How would you have responded to that? The reason I ask is because a lot of women seem to think being with a footballer is all about the fab life. You know, they think football, fame and fortune.
Hence the statistic of a divorce within 5 years, because you want a man for all the wrong reasons, you know. And if I were to respond to her, I think I would have told her, firstly, you don't need a man. You're a strong woman. I know it's Women's Month last month, so just to touch on that, you're a strong woman. You don't need a man. Times are evolving. You know, study, have your own goals, and the right person will come along. Do not look for the wrong things, because marrying a footballer, Sonia, you know it better than I do. It's possibly the most difficult partner you could have, because you never know where you're going to be next. Number one, you sign a contract for 2 years and you start to have a family, you need to uproot.
Injuries. I have to nurse you through those injuries as your woman.
We're so fragile, you know, not only physical injuries. If you had a bad game.
And the coach is on your case.
Coach is on your case. You come home.
The fans are booing you. Well, they used to boo my husband all the time.
That was a good one, the boo.
They booed him at every game. Even after a goal, they still booed him, you know.
Exactly. You know, so you deal with that.
I know. He comes back home after a bad game and I have to say something that will make him feel good about himself.
So she's probably wishing for the wrong thing, because, you know, there's so much baggage that comes with that.
I could give you a half right now, but we're going to be messing up the sound, so I'm not going to.
Yeah, so I'd advise her not to go after somebody in the sports space, because I think she's devaluing herself, you know, as I mentioned earlier. Do you have your goals?
Do you, babe?
Stay in your lane.
Oh, love that. Wow. So now, while on that topic of girls wanting men to do things for them, what is your opinion on the slay queen phenomenon and the blessers, especially when you consider that you are raising a girl, girl that is going to be a teenager in 6 years' time? There's a vulture out there waiting for her, eyeing her, waiting for her to reach puberty, and they're going to pounce on her. What is your opinion on that?
Yo. You know, I kind of stay blinded to that, because I know it's inevitable and it's going to happen. But I leave. There's just so much we can do for our kids. We can instill the discipline, the hard work, the values. But when they're out there in the world, they need to face the world themselves. I think, when they go out there. All we can do is pray. Pray that they have the right friends. Because I think that if you have a right circle of friends, the chances of you doing the wrong thing are limited. Having said that, it's out of our hands. It's out of my hands. Myself and Guinevere just needs to do the best that we can do now. Instill those disciplines now, so that when she goes out there, she has the value of, I don't need a man, firstly. That's first and foremost. I don't need a man to let me do what I need to do. Even my dad, I'm not going to need him. I will be able to study and chase my dream and my passion. And if a man comes along, I would then take him as my partner. But we just hope and pray that that is what will happen.
I think now you understand why I chose you to be on that seat and pose these questions, right? Because you have a natural ability to not only handle the way I'm asking questions, because these are not easy questions, but I'm putting it in a very tight corner. But you are the most relevant person to ask, because you are raising a girl. Now, I'm going to read out a Facebook post. Okay, ladies, name one way to keep a man that doesn't involve sex, food, or money. End of quote. As Athena's father, how would you respond to that?
I was going to say food. You have to cook. I mean, that's the fundamentals, isn't it?
A man's got to eat, right? But he's got his own hands to cook, right?
A way to a man's heart is through the stomach. I can't cook, so I think I don't know about that one. So how do I answer that? That's a hard one. That's a very difficult one.
Why is it difficult?
Because it's there's so much more that you have to do. When you're a youngster, you don't realize it. I just assume that I'm getting married. Now we can have sex in peace and do this and do that and go where we want to and eat where we want to. That's the first thing. It's your male instinct to understand this woman is here for this. But as the family starts growing and you understand that there's different needs and you finally understand that this woman sometimes has to go to work, come back, cook, make sure that the homework is there. Are they prepared for tomorrow? And now she still needs to please you in bed. The minute you understand that, I think then you understand there's so much more to this partner. But it's impossible for you to know this before you get married. No matter how much married counseling you get, Sonia. They say the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Experience is the only way. It's the best teacher. Experience is the best teacher. So, coming back to your question is that woman needs to be understanding. She needs to understand her partner for who he is, his temperament, where he needs a bit of self-esteem, if he's lacking a bit of self-esteem. So you need to plug in the holes of your man and vice versa.
I love that you say vice versa.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll let you off, because I was about to say something that was going to make you to keep digging that grave. Yeah. But that was a good one. So now you're also father to Diego, who is 14. How are you raising him, especially in a time where the hashtag men are trash is trending almost daily? Not to mention bullying, peer pressure, drugs, alcohol, etc., etc.?
Very difficult, because I don't have a reference, Sonia. As we mentioned earlier, I grew up without a dad. So the father figure in my life was absent. My mom did have four brothers, which I think filled that void somewhat. But from day to day, there's no reference for me. So this thing called dad is new to me. And I don't think there's a manual or a handbook for parenting. There might be a few out there, but I don't think that there's the right and the wrong way. So I'm actually going off the cuff. But I think I stick to the fundamentals of stay humble, respect, work hard. Now, because I come from a sporting background, Diego is not naturally an athlete. So with sport and with participating, it teaches you so much values. And whenever I speak to youngsters, I say, you guys, 1% will possibly become a professional. But the values that you get out of playing sport, timekeeping, discipline, hard work, working in a team, all those attributes contributes to you after school, you know, whatever profession you're going to choose. So those fundamentals that I try and instill in Diego that I might not be successful in, humble he is, respectful he is, but the laziness, the watching TV, the sitting on the couch, playing games, doing your homework or your assignment at last minute. Now, I understand he's a boy. I used to do the same. But that is the fundamentals I'm trying to instill in him. To say that I had nothing. I did not have options. That's the difference. If I did not make it in football, I don't know what else I would have done. Yes, I finished school. Yes, I worked for Liberty Life. I could have possibly gone into the corporate world. But I didn't have options. You, my boy, have options. And that could be your demise. You know? The fact that if I do not make it, I've got my dad, I've got my mom. That's the danger. And I make him aware of that. I try my best to make him aware to say, you need to work for what you have. I do not just give. You want the latest FIFA 2018? What are you going to do? Give me your grades. Here's your chores. We work on a point system. It might not always work, but clean your bed. Make up your bed. Polish your shoes. Do this, do this, do this. So I try and do that. I don't have a reference. I think it's going to work. I can just pray it's going to work, Sonia.
Jeez. Wow. You said something profound. You know, the fact that you didn't have a reference point because you were, yeah, you were raised by your mum. You've just revealed something that a lot of people use as an excuse. A lot of men use an excuse whereby they grow up not wanting to be responsible men, and then they'll always blame being raised by single women and say, "Well, I'm a thug because I didn't have a father. I didn't have a male role model. I didn't have a father figure. I burgle people's houses because I don't know any better. I've got no male model to teach me better, to teach me otherwise." I think you've just put it out there, made it very difficult for all other irresponsible men out there who use that as an excuse instead of taking those obstacles, hiccups, speed bumps to turn the tide or to make things better for the next generation. Kudos to you for that.
Thank you, Sonia. But I'd like to add that I am by no means perfect.
Nobody is.
I was on the brink of choosing the other side. You know, I grew up in Westbury. I'm sure we know the violence and the gangsterism and the drugs that's involved. I played for a team in Waterfall, Newlands. We were 15 boys. As I stand here today, of that 15 boys, only 3 or 4 boys are alive.
Sure.
Victims to gangsterism, victims to drugs, victims to this. So I think there was this halo, somebody protecting me. Every time they go and do the wrong things, something in the back of my mind would say, "You can't, you can't." And then the peer pressure comes in. In Afrikaans, they say, "Yes, a bangbroek." You know, and tomorrow you need to get up and go and chill with those guys. And then they ridicule you for not having, in Greek they say, archidia. I can't say the English word, it's a bit rude. For not having that masculinity to say, "Listen, we're going to go and do this." So that is why I say at home, because I know if I do the wrong thing and I come back home, oh boy, oh boy. Is Benita, my mom, not going to sort me out properly? So they say, do not spare the rod. So, you know, so I think so many times, countless and countless and countless times, we're going to go and steal this. We're going to go and kick this one. We're going to do that. And I just steered clear of that. So a little bit fortunate, a little bit blessed.
The halo you spoke about. that was from your mom, protecting you and being with you wherever you were. So now tell me, what did you learn from your mom who had to mother and father you? What did you learn from her, and how did that help you in your parental duties in as far as Diego is concerned?
I think no matter how I try and parent him with being strict, at the end of the day, I always show the care and show the love. I might reprimand you, but before you go to bed, I remind you, I'm doing this for you because I love you, because I care for you. So that was always the cushion that I received from my mom. It's always with love. Even when they told me to stop playing football because my grades were not good enough, it was probably the worst 6 months in my life, because this is the only thing that I love and I know how to do, and I'm doing well, and I'm, you know, it's with my friends and it's fun, and it gets taken away from you, but it gets taken away with love. So that's what I've taken from that, and I try and instill that with Diego.
Balance.
I try.
Love that. So now, when you look at the way you are parenting now, do you think it's tougher being a parent today than it would have been perhaps when the time that your mom had to mother you? When you look at the two different generations, in as far as parenthood is concerned, was it tougher then or is it tougher now?
150% tougher now. You know, we've got all this distraction, Sonia, you know. Social media. It is possibly, it has its benefits, massive benefits, but when it comes to parenting and kids, they have access to so much. And this becomes so much more difficult because of social media. People and kids are becoming famous over social media. There's no longer that interaction, that human action. I'm saying what everybody else out there is saying. We're losing the plot, even adults. I sit in a room with 4 or 5 guys, or people, or ladies, or whoever it may be. Social media has taken over. It's a drug. I'm also on social media. I do it. I find myself now and again listening to my daughter or my son, but I'm scrolling through Instagram. So giving them divided attention. It's captured our homes. It's captured our kids. And for this, I do think that this generation, it's so much more difficult to be a parent.
Sure. And you often go out to lunch or dinner and all you see, different tables. Some tables you see a family of 4, mum, dad, 2 kids, the 2 parents on their cell phones and then the kids on their tablets. They're out for dinner. They left the house.
Yep.
They left what could have been quality family time at home, mm-hmm, to quality family time in a restaurant, but with the gadgets.
That's why a year ago, with load shedding, it was a blessing in disguise. Sonia,
you're right. It was a blessing in disguise.
I'd like to throw a question to you.
Yeah.
On parenting, when do you know is the right time to let your son or your daughter have a phone? When do you allow them to go onto a media platform, social media platform like Twitter or Instagram? Is there the right time? Is there a wrong time? I haven't a clue. I'm trying to figure this out. Diego has a phone. He doesn't have social media. So you don't want to make him the outcast. At the same time, you want to manage it. So this is something that I'm still trying to find the right and the wrong thing.
Well, to answer your question, the way we did it, Nathan only started having a phone now this year in high school. We gave him a phone in January in high school. So that's grade 8 at the age of 13. And the question we asked him in the beginning, when he asked, when can I have a cell phone? And myself and Matthew asked him, what do you need a cell phone for? And we said, if you need to contact your friends and you are at home, there's the telecom phone you can use. If you need to call them on their cell phone using our cell phone, you can use our cell phone. If you need to call us while you're at school, you can go to reception if it's an emergency and you can use the phone at the school. So what do you need a cell phone for? He couldn't bring an answer, and we knew we were not ready to give him a cell phone, and we had agreed that we were going to give him a cell phone in high school. And as far as social media is concerned, no chance. The only thing he's on is WhatsApp, and I check on him every day. I check his profile picture. Sometimes he has thugs as his profile picture with, okay, I'm not going to give the description because then it's going to be like I'm judging somebody based on their appearance. So I'm not even going to go there. But there's some pictures that I deem to be inappropriate for someone who's 13 years old. And I look at his status as well. And I keep tabs of that. And I'm always having to remind him that, hey, that profile picture is inappropriate for a 13-year-old. And luckily for us, he's the kind of boy that's so level-headed that if he points something out, he's going to apologize and, you know, delete it or change it or whatever. He did attempt at a Twitter handle, and I caught him on the desktop because I've installed something on the desktop at home, which he doesn't know about. There's no ways of finding it, but I can keep track of the pages that he visits on his desktop, which is in his bedroom. Even if he deletes the search history, I still know what he's checking online. I'm not policing him. And we've sat him down and I said, we don't have time to be policing you because we are very busy people. Life is busy. Mm. We've got other things to do. We've got your little brother also to monitor. But every now and again, I also check the playlist on his phone and on his flash drive. If there's an inappropriate song out there, like Iwokye Para, a lot of parents don't monitor what their kids play. Iwokye Para has some... There's a paragraph in there that you would not want your child to listen to, something that you and your wife, Gwen, should be listening to in the bedroom. Yep. So it's things like that. I'm not a perfect parent. Matthew's not a perfect parent. We do parenting our way. You do parenting your way. Because remember, you are accountable to your kids. We are accountable to our kids. Your kids are your responsibility. And our kids are our responsibility. Sure. So to get to your question, there's no way of right and wrong in as far as parenting goes. Different strokes for different folks. Now Diego has taken after you. I mean, you said already he loves football. Would you be 100% okay with him following a professional career, given the stats that you've already read, whereby after retirement you find a lot of players who end up going back to the backyard room in Soweto because they've squandered all their money? Some of these players, they get millions signing on fee bonuses when you guys win, and then you have huge salaries. I mean, some of the players are earning 300,000 rands a month, but then after retirement you get players who are addicted to drugs and alcohol because they didn't plan for retirement.
So if Diego wants to become a professional footballer, he first needs to understand what it takes to become one. And if he does on his own understand that the dedication and the hours that needs to be given to that sport, then I will support it 100%. Because if the Lord spares me, I would then be there alongside him, guiding him as he progresses, you know, making the right financial decisions, not 5 years before you end, which I did, immediately when you start a professional career. That's when you need to start planning financially, you know. So that's just one of the aspects, finance, but then managing your career on its own. I would be there. So if he shows me that he wants to do that, yes, I will support him along, because I think that football has, as I was blessed, that football has taken me away from my circumstances. It has, more than anything, it has opened my mind. The fact that I lived in different countries, that experience and that life lessons is priceless. It's not the money you've earned, but it's the life lessons that I've come to attain. And because of that, I can now parent my kids differently.
You mentioned preparing for retirement financially. What about mentally and emotionally?
Oh, that's something that's it's such a void in our space. When I say space, I say sports people. Just yesterday, I was at a coaching course with a lot of football people, with a few ex-professionals, and I mentioned that it is something that not all of us have. It's like this quiet cancer that eats away at people, and you die a slow death in your corner, isolated. Yet so many of us retire every year, and nobody speaks out about it, because mentally, the doctor described it to me once. He says, you are of the herd mentality. You have been told all your life, this is what you do, this is when you train, this is how you train. You've been surrounded by people every day of your life. I played professional for 17 years. Suddenly, it's taken away from you. The human body responds to that. It's like getting divorced. This, you wake up for how many years? This person is next to you. One day you wake up, there's nobody next to you. So you go through emotions that needs to be dealt with. Number one, emotions is one thing. Now there's the financial burden, if you have not planned. You know, so there's so many side effects to retirement that really it's a topic on its own, and it needs to be addressed.
And talking about emotions, does the fact that the seeking of autographs and photo opportunities, because now it lessens to a certain degree, does that play with your emotion that I was so popular, everybody wanted a piece of me for 17 years, and now nobody's stopping me for a picture or an autograph? Does that play a part in this whole scenario?
It depends on the individual. You know, if the individual is somebody that would ride on the fame, clearly, if it's no longer there, it's going to affect you. Me personally, I can say this without hesitation, that the less I get troubled, the better. Not troubled. The less I'm requested to do ABC, the better. I think that's just the type of person I am. So for me, it doesn't affect me at all. The difficulty is now, when you are retired and you are in a space with your peers, and let's say some of them are still relevant, still playing, and you no longer play. No matter who you are, it affects you. You go back home, you're like, okay, this is the reality of the situation. But the quicker you understand that, and you don't, you are not less of a human or a person if you are not recognizable, should not by any means affect you.
Sure. What is your advice to a youngster who has just been signed on? This is a child who's never seen R1,000 in his bank account. Now he gets a signing on fee of R1,000,000. He's 18.
Financially?
Yeah, or every other way.
Every other way. When you play football, it's never about the money. Lucas Radebe always told me. He says, if you chase money, you won't get it. It's not about the money. You got to love what you do. It's your passion. You've wanted to do this. You're getting paid to do what you love. I don't think there's anything better in this world. So enjoy the opportunity. Try to be the best that you can. What you put in is what you get out. If you dream to win the World Cup, you might play in the World Cup. If you dream to play for Kaizer Chiefs or Pirates, you might get there or you'll fall short. So if your dreams are not bigger, if it does not scare you, then you're not dreaming big enough. So if you're going to start out, say, I want to play for Real Madrid, or I want to be a World Cup winner, I want to be I want to win the Ballon d'Or, aim high. And the effort that needs to be put into achieving that is the important thing. That's what I'll tell the boy. And do not chase money. Money will chase you.
And tell me, while on that topic, are clubs and agents responsible in guiding and supporting a player regarding such aspects of life?
In South Africa, clubs do not do that. I don't think we need to expect them to do that. I think it is the player, agent, or manager to guide the boy. And if you vest enough interest in the boy, you need to then hand him over to a financial advisor that you have vetted, that you know will do the right thing, and you need to oversee that. So yes, the agent has a role to play, but at the end of the day, it's the player's money, and he decides what he needs to do. So the clubs should educate them, equip them with that knowledge, not necessarily tell them what to do. But at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is, it is the player that must take responsibility of his or her success or undoing.
Stiga, many, many, many can learn from you. You are such an inspiration. I invited you here because I knew that you were the right and relevant person for this. Richer in knowledge and wisdom because of you today. I don't think you understand the impact that this conversation has had, not only on me, but I think from today your wife is going to look at you with a different eye. And I'm saying that in a positive manner. And I know that a lot of men are going to look at their women with a different eye. I invited you here because I know you respect women. If I could, I would have invited you here in August, but it doesn't have to be August because Women's Month doesn't have to end in August. It can be every day. You are an inspiration, and just know the amount of respect that I have for a man like you. Thank you for this insightful conversation.
Thank you for having me in the opinion booth, ladies. I hope it's not the last, but... we don't often get platforms to express, you know, ourselves. With the interview, you need to be diplomatic, say this, say that. I really enjoyed this interview, Sonia. I think I enjoyed it because I think you know me a bit. So you scratched in places that I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go there.
That's the opinion booth.
That's my opinion. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. My humble opinion, in the words of Tyler Durden's character in the movie Fight Club, we are a generation of men raised by women. I'm wondering if another woman is really the answer we need. End quote. Aspire to inspire before you expire. Win an entrepreneurial package worth $2 million with Alpha Code. Alpha Code is inviting applications for its prestigious Alpha Code Incubate program that seeks to identify and reward high potential, innovative entrepreneurs to boost the development of fintech and financial services in South Africa. 16 businesses will be invited to pitch for 8 places on the Alpha Code Incubate program. The final 8 businesses will complete a customized 12-month program and will benefit from an entrepreneurial package worth 2 million rand each. The package consists of 1 million in grant funding, 1 million worth of support including mentorship, monthly expert-led sessions, exclusive office space in Sandton, marketing, legal and other business support services, as well as access to RMI's networks. The first round of applications closed this Friday, 7 September 2018. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more on the cliffcentral.com website.
This is cliffcentral.com.